So this is my sort of own trajectory. Then we work, this building, you cannot see it immediately, but the building we work from is a place in the center of Cape Town called the Pan-African Market. The Pan-African Market is a, officially it's a kind of art and craft market. You know, you have traders from all over the continent trading their wares. You have hairdressers, restaurants, artist studios, you know, a bunch of stuff. It's like it's a kind of a city inside the city. Now, considering the political history of this country, but also specifically of the city, that city in the city inevitably function as an island for a long time, even though we are right in the middle of the city. So this is the kind of identity of the Pan-African Market in Cape Town. At the time, myself and a couple of friends initiated in 1996. Chimurenga was not born at the time. I was working as a journalist and as a DJ. So when we then initiate Chimurenga as a kind of organ, as a kind of intellectual and critical organ of this Pan-African Market, because the main activity of the Pan-African Market is that you have all sort of people who gather here every day, and this gathering in and of itself produces culture. It produces a kind or certain kinds of culture. So it became necessary to do two things. Before Chimurenga started, we started playing with the idea of radio, that if we had a sort of event that brings together the ideas and the initiatives from this place, and we broadcast them in the space itself. So what we did, shortly after we launched the market in 96, we started to have weekly sessions in a central place of the building on Friday afternoon, where we'll have music played and we'll have people reciting poems and all that. But all of this activity, because the building is a four-floor building with different people in the studio, we put speakers all over the place, right? So it became a sort of internal radio that we broadcast as an event. And increasingly, because we will have different people coming from outside to participate in this program, you will then have people come in to listen. You know, they will just come in this space on a Friday afternoon, not necessarily where we're broadcasting from, sit somewhere in the building, in the studio, and listen to the program. So it was kind of a meta radio, almost like radio by a radio station, you know, of course, playing with this. But you can only experience it on site. Chimurenga started and did his own thing as a publication, but we never gave up on this idea of art, creativity, criticism, knowledge, history, working in duality, not only in print, but also working in a more audible, sonic, you know, realm. So what we did is, for the first few years, Chimurenga was launched in 2002. From the very first edition of the magazine, once the publication will appear, we will curate an event somewhere in the city, which will be thematically oriented, connected to the journal. So let me give you an example. We released an issue called We Are All Nigerians, which looks at the import, the history of the invention of Nigeria and how the Nigerian as a citizen become a signifier, a kind of threat in this country and elsewhere for something we struggle to deal with. All right. Just, it's a very bad summary. But then we will also produce a kind of large scale concert called Philosophy, which focuses on the work, life, and philosophy of Fela Kuti, and invite poets, musicians, artists to reinterpret this into a performance. And we had this performance in Johannesburg, attended by a number of people as a public event. So the journal always works this way. We'll document this performance, you know, and maybe we'll play it at another session somewhere. So we already had this radio running, but which never really worked as a radio station. In 2008, then, with a couple of friends, we decided instead of doing these events, every single time we produce an issue, we organize an event. We used to call this event Chimurenga Sessions. We organize an event. Why don't we actually organize a festival which will last for a month? Yeah? And during that month, we work with the Pan-African Space Station, the Pan-African Market as a radio studio, officially, right? We actually name it a radio studio, and we set up a broadcast center. So once we did that, I was always very intrigued by the possibility of intervening on the airwaves. I wasn't particularly interested in the internet at that time as a space for dissemination. At that time, our tactical choice was to use the internet as a space for storage, not necessarily for dissemination. I just felt like there was too much shit going on there. So it was important that we work in different realms to also work with the history of broadcasting on the continent. So we spent a year trying to acquire a broadcasting license with the licensing body in South Africa, which is called, I don't remember its name now, shit, just flew out of my mind. But for a year, we had lawyers and experts working with us, helping us to acquire the community radio broadcasting license, which will work for 1 month, you know, and it will be on the airwaves. We were not successful. They just couldn't, the concept, I don't know if the concept was too complex or too politically problematic for them, but it was very difficult for them to contain this project. You know, it wasn't like, oh, it's a community of this particular religious background. They couldn't quite establish what the community would be so that they could then give us the community radio license, because here you only have two licenses to broadcast officially. You have a community license, and then you have a commercial license. So at the end of that process, I started wondering, actually, we can broadcast a pirate station, but the internet itself, even as commodified as it is already a pirate station. So why don't we, instead of investing our energy trying to get a license, why don't we just broadcast on the internet, right? And at that point, then we start to think of the internet as a platform for dissemination, right? We didn't need anyone's permission. We just needed to get the necessary equipment, you know, and resources to be able to do that. So we just launched it. There was no laws in South Africa at the time regulating internet radio stations. There had been some attempts of internet radio stations, but there was no legal framework for this. And so there was a legal gap. We just went into that gap, set up the radio station, not asked anyone. So basically set up a pirate station, the way that's practicing, right? And so in 2008, for 1 month, I think from 16 October, 16 November, we set up this. And it was usually successful, you know, in terms of people coming in. Essentially, what we've been doing before with the Chimurenga station, but in a concentrated way, because it is one full month where every day we're broadcasting from, say, 1 o'clock to midnight, and everyone can produce programming and so forth. The kind of editorial line for content was also, just like the Chimurenga sessions, kind of geared towards the contents of the publication, like the ideas and the questions that the magazine generally raises would then be directing editorially what we're interested in, what we invite people to participate in. We called it the Pan-African Space Station for a number of reasons. First, to locate it with the history of this very specific place, the Pan-African Market. Space to deal with the politics of space is a very political thing in South Africa, you know, but space in a very literal sense, as in land, specific space that black people can or cannot occupy in the city. So that too was kind of literary, literal in implicating the politics of who can do where or who can be where. The third thing we wanted to kind of raise was this this kind of almost a sort of historical blockage to connect cultural production on the continent, well, at the time, you know, cultural production on the continent with some kind of idea of futurity and exploration and experimentation, right? Of course, Afrofuturism is now a trend. Everybody is talking about it. But I think at the time, there was a kind of reluctance, you know, to imagine the production of culture with something that is also a projection, you know, an anticipation, a speculation. It was always a kind of reverse process, like going into this tradition, blah, blah, blah. So we wanted to intervene in this kind of conceptual space. So these are, and the fourth reason we call this space station is because the acronym then of the Pan-African Space Station is PASS. And PASS also has a very important history in this country. I mean, the ID book that black people were required to carry during apartheid to move from place to place is called the PASS book, you know. And this is essentially the book. Like if a policeman or woman found you somewhere where you're not supposed to be, they will ask you for your passbook. And your passbook needs to show that you are in the city and you are allowed to be in the city, maybe because you work as a domestic worker and so forth. We also wanted to touch into that history. So that was the radio project, but we didn't want it to work because of all this space consideration I just mentioned. We also wanted to actually take over physical space in the city. So the studio will be based in the Pan-African market, and just like a space station, we'll launch from here into satellites all over the city. So you will have studios everywhere in the city, right? So there will be kind of a central broadcasting unit, but we'll go into a church and set up a venue there. We'll go into, and from there, people will be working between the church, the community center, some jazz club in the township, whatever, connecting all these places, which are disconnected in the geography of Cape Town, because it's a very segregated city, connecting all these places to the Pan-Africans, to the Pan-African market. So it's essentially using the metaphor of a space station in a physical reality. And then there's the idea of the very physical limitation of this invented community, which only exists in our minds and in our relationships. You know, I have friends and collaborators in Kinshasa and Dakar, but there is not one body that brings these relationships together. Sometimes the publication does that, but we wanted the radio station to do that also, to have people collaborate, contributing from all of these places into the radio station. That was a big motivation. So opening it up, really using the open space and the technology to be working from different spaces at the same time, because the internet made that possible. So we took all of these aspects and did the festival for the festival / radio for 3 years. And after that, it became clear. Sorry, I'm just going on with this.
Sure, sure. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Right. After that, it became clear that to organize a festival which invites people from all over the world to Cape Town for a month, it's such a logistically heavy, you know, project, flights and so forth, that we needed to change tactics. That was one thing. The second thing is that personally I was becoming more and more disillusioned with the approach of working on a project base, you know, on an event base, on a calendar, so 1 month, which is September and October and so forth. But I was becoming more and more interested in the possibility of setting up structures and infrastructures that facilitate ongoing day-to-day production. Mm-hmm. You know, at the time, the journal had then transformed from a journal which appears whenever the fuck it appears to a newspaper as a step towards this kind of ongoing, you know, you have an infrastructure that permits shit coming out every day. And I thought it was an opportunity to shift the radio also into this paradigm and away from the project or event paradigm. So we took over a jazz venue in a kind of student area in Cape Town. We took over a lease in this place and declared that this space would then be the ongoing studio of the Pan-African Space Station. You know, essentially it's like a public venue, it's a small jazz. We curated all the music and all the events that happened in that space, and every single day we were broadcasting from there. Just because there was live music, DJs, poets, then the station becomes a very active place on an everyday basis, as opposed to 1 month of the year. And then all of our friends who are visiting, whenever they come to Cape Town, they are immediately included into the programming and so forth. And we also have possibility then to have contributions from people elsewhere, not because we demand it at a particular time, but whenever is it that they have capacity to produce it, because the radio is going on all the time. And so all of that, we did that for 3 years. And we lost the lease at this jazz place, this jazz venue, because the building was being sold and whatever. And so we had to rethink what is the next move for the Pan-African Space Station. And I think my thinking at the time was that maybe the new identity of the project would be that it kind of encroach onto events that are already happening. It does no longer become an event in and of itself, or it does no longer become a venue, a specific venue in and of itself, but it's like this floating unit that can then descend on various places depending on what the landing ground, if there's some kind of landing ground, and I mean a conceptual sense, that's available. So for instance, if we are investigating something on Congolese music, its history, its politics, and so forth, and there's a big exhibition in Paris on Congolese modern art, and they invite us to participate in that exhibition in one way or another, what we propose in return is that we're going to land a spaceship in the middle of that exhibition. So in a way, we encroach onto things that are going on for our own purposes, for our own queries. And so we land in the middle of Fondation Cartier, which is, you know, everyone knows the history of that place and its politics and its economics, but still we are able to create a bubble where our friends in Paris and in Europe feel safe enough, you know, to come and participate. But it's not a reclusive thing, it's not in the background, it's right in the middle of this thing, you know, but create an environment where they can come and participate. So it's, since last year, we've been testing this as a method. We did Paris, London, New York, successively, I mean, the worst places in the world, literally, to kind of test the skin, you know, the skin of this project, because you have to go in the most oppressive environment to kind of see if this idea really holds, you know, because if you just go among friends, then, you know, but like you go into Fondation Cartier and you do this, and if you survive, then maybe you're onto something. Right. So anyway, at the time you experienced the space station in New York, it was part of this experimental phase, which we're now moving to the next level in intervening and participating in various spaces of our choosing on the continent. This year we'll be in Lagos for an event, we'll be in Cairo, and we'll be in Harare. And this is now working more closer to friends and people we have an issue with, because we've kind of been able to model through this model traveling what could work, what couldn't work, and how it could work, how we could make use of it, how we could make it welcoming, and so forth, how expansive we should be the programming. This is some of the things we've been testing over the last year. That's sort of where we're at.
Great.
That was a long historical.
That was great. you came through a lot of different questions that I had.
Yes.
Yeah, maybe after having all those public experiences, now you describe what was the first motivation and how it came up, the project of having a radio station within Chimurenga. I'd like to know, you've been mentioning that a lot already, but after having all those experiences abroad and those, as you said, very tough situation, Paris, London, New York, I'm curious to know if you have the feeling that this project kind of change philosophically, it kind of went through other direction yet that you were not expecting, and what kind of attention it brought also from those specific areas. Did you have any particular feeling, or I don't know why, but I'm going back to New York next week for Armory Show, and they have this perspective on African art. This is an ongoing thing, this relation to what's going on in Africa. More specifically, how do you think that this African community grew or has been welcome in other just understood in those new contexts? I mean, yeah. Maybe you have a few things to say about this.
Right. Well, there's some epistemological concerns here also. Is that once we decide to work from a more mobile approach, and mobile as in physically moving the thing to places, one of the main motivations for that was to then establish the radio station as a research, as a mobile laboratory, as a research space, you know. So basically to connect more directly the radio station to what we are actually investigating. To give you an example, Fondation Cartier doing the big thing on Congo, which is very imperial or whatever, but we are also on our own terms investigating. We have a long-standing research project of a collaborative novel which investigates the moment of the assassination of Kabila, the father, right, president of DRC. Now, this research is moving through two different channels. One is comics production, and the other is music. And the totality of comics and music is something that from the late 80s, you know, became another space for cultural production that are called the lower frequencies. So we have this large kind of research thing that we chip at bit by bit that we call the lower frequency. So us sitting in Paris, installing the space station in Paris, was an opportunity with the resources and our network to invite people like Mwezi Ngangura, Jean-Pierre Bekou, a bunch of really important witnesses, but also critics of that moment, you know, consciously or not. They may not necessarily have specifically written it in that way, but to organize a conversation on past between Jean-Pierre Bekolo, Mwezi Ngangura, and Sheri Samba. Now, Sheri Samba is the kind of art world appropriation of this lower frequency. Mwezi Ngangura is a filmmaker who, in 1978 already, made this incredible documentary on Kinshasa as a city and the culture it produces called, what is it called? Kinkiese, right? And Jean-Pierre Bekolo is a Cameroonian filmmaker who is known for working outside of this paradigm of African cinema and how it's viewed by us history, and is most directly influenced by Mwezi Ngangura as a filmmaker. So these three people, because of this exhibition, we have the opportunity to have them sitting together and having a conversation, looking at films, listening to music, talking about this bridge between Sheri Samba production of this kind of cartoonish image and comics production in Kinshasa and so forth. So for us, this is research. Yeah. It's because we have this research agenda that we can actually exist in spaces that if we did not have an agenda, it would be very difficult to collaborate meaningfully, right? And now, as a result of that sitting of the space station in Paris for a couple of days, we were able to move our research to another level and so forth and so forth. So essentially, we now have a number of instruments. The radio is one instrument. The publication, the chronic, is one instrument. But we also have this third instrument we call the library, which is more installation-based, which is something that taps into local resources, like the installation we did, a performer inviting this door, this hairdresser, to bring a whole other dimension of knowledge, which is not spoken, but which is more tactile and viewable. So we work with this instrument continually. You know, one fit to the next. Next, there will be a publication about the Congo, but before that, you have a project. So there's this kind of, you know, it's difficult to explain, but because it's the same team that's realizing all of this, we are able to see the connections between all of this. So I think it's important to describe that, to suggest that the radio does not work in isolation. It works part of a system that we are busy constructing ourselves, you know, that allows us to produce knowledge that we can represent in this way and then critique in this other way and disseminate in that way and da, 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 da. So that's one thing. So now back to this discourse about Africa is that, for me, the important thing is not to be reactive to it. You know, I really don't want our preoccupation to be based on what someone else thinks or says, because a lot of time it's actually quite stupid and backward. So it's like you're constantly going back, you know, to explain, oh no, we have ideas too. We are, fuck that shit. So in a way, it's like, now we don't really care that much, you know, in a way, because Fondation Kati don't require them to be the most progressive thinkers in the world in order to work with them anymore, you know, just because there's now an element of mutuality. And I think that was lacking for a long time. I think what has been lacking is mutuality. A lot of the time, the exchange has been on the basis of one person helping the other, one person making the other visible, one person translating, blah, 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 blah. Now, I think because you have our own project, our own agenda, and we have meeting points on various levels, it could be financial, it could be representational, and so forth, there's an aspect of mutuality. And I think that, I don't know for sure, I don't know what anyone says, but at least I feel a bit safer in engaging. And, you know, I'm no longer kind of fearful, oh, there's this entire discourse in New York, how are we going to see it in this thing? I really don't give a shit. I have friends in New York, people I want to talk to, and I ask those friends, who they want to talk to, and through that, if performer is able to be, agrees to give us space for this conversation, we do what they think. You know, and hopefully they find a way to connect that thing that we do to whatever else they do. But we leave it to them, you know. We don't worry too much about that. We just focus on having, in establishing, in a real sense, the community that for a long time just work in our heads, you know, people in different places. I don't know if that answers your question at all.
It does, thank you. yeah, maybe I'm gonna finish this short interview with a last question about other projects that you as a collective have been interested in or been looking at more carefully that kind of influenced you or, you know, whatever, you know, like been you feel close to in regards to the community of radio. It seems that there are more and more radio projects here and there because it's also a way for the people to take voices, you know, and to be in the discursive space and, you know, take some space in this discursivity that is not often given to everyone. So just wanted to know if you have anything in mind that is old, that is current, that is not necessarily based on radio, but maybe something that is also coming from South Africa or whatever, something that is not...
The thing that really draws me to radio as a practice, not... I mean, radio, essentially, a lot of time we are talking about the method of the simulation, the airwaves and so forth. But for me, radio as a practice, which is... is this aspect that is simultaneously production and documentation. I've been obsessed with the possibility of working outside the linear framework. You think, you write, you publish. No. I think that at least the world in which we work and create demands more urgency than this kind of solitary creative process where you think a fucking concept and imagine you, and then you work. No, I think I've really been obsessed with the possibility of all of this being intermingled. Yeah? And I think I like that radio makes that possible. That the performance is also the archiving, is also the dissemination. Simultaneously, mm-hmm. as well as the production, simultaneously. So when you are strumming your guitar or saying something, you're not doing it in a way that it, someone else will make time to repackage it. But this kind of live and direct and immediate thing is just one aspect. The other aspect is that while it's happening, you are recording it. And because you are doing it in front of an audience, because our radio is a very public thing, it's the studio, you are not isolated, you are also performing it. So there's a third dimension there of you are not talking to an invisible audience, you are talking to an invisible audience, as well as a physical, which all those force, or not force, but at least create a possibility for something else than a strict performance, like in a theatrical sense or in a concert sense, but also something other than this kind of studio wall bubble where, you know, you are in total control, no one actually knows, while you're having your breakfast, you're talking there, and, you know, it breaks a couple of things. I'm interested in what that can produce as form. Mm-hmm. I'm interested in what kind of quality can be produced when you break away the walls of the studio, but you still call it a studio, you know. So I think radio just creates a space for some possibilities. So we insist in calling it radio, you know, and we insist that calling it radio in itself is a performance. is a performance that allows us to imagine, you know, not necessarily only radio, but also performance, but also, you know, also knowledge, also, you know, like when you give your back to the audience, you know, and you are speaking into a mic, but you are also aware that the audience are there. Like, what does it, I was really fascinated by what that creates when you're in the middle of a place like Fondation Cartier, you know, because you're in the middle of Fondation Cartier, you know that very rich people are watching you, you know, but you're also pretending they're not there, you know what I mean? It's like you create something else. Sorry. Okay, let's go, maybe let's WhatsApp. Sure. Okay, cool. Okay, sure. Sorry, I just had to. So there's that thing that I'm really, really drawn to. Now, I don't necessarily know that everyone is attracted. You know, everyone is drawn to the medium or to the practice for very different reasons. I don't listen to live radio as much as I would like to. I listen mainly to podcasts and all that, which is a different form of broadcasting mm-hmm. also. Mm-hmm. But I don't listen to radio, which supposes, you know, a kind of live direct as much as I should. Just like I don't read enough newspapers.
Yeah.
Right.
When you're a journalist, for sure you don't read enough newspapers.
Right.
Okay.
So I'm not sure if I have many examples. There are many things that I like, but they are not necessarily ongoing. A mm-hmm. lot of time it's a once-off project.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of it is music-based. For a long time, there was this project in London, which has now veered into a completely different direction. But it was, what do they call themselves? Basically, they were going into different clubs and inviting a specific DJ and then streaming the performance in that club, that party that they organized to an audience. What drew me to that particular project, I don't remember the name now, I may send it to you online later, but what drew me to that was the fact that they completely reinvented the concept of the event as an online phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Like the event is entirely presented as an event on the internet. It doesn't even exist as an event, you know, in this other realm. So that was interesting. And based on that, we started these kind of regular concerts that we call Stories About Music in Africa. Essentially, they happen in our office. We invite the musician. Our office also a radio studio. We invite musicians and maybe at lunchtime and they do a concert, but we publicize the concert only on the internet. And so people actually gather online to watch the concert. There's no audience in the room.
Mm.
So I'm also interested in something that shifts this concept of audiences.
Mm.
Essentially, which is what radio does. There's another project. The last kind of traditional radio project that I've been impressed with is something called Radio Okapi in DRC. In the post-war year, it's interesting that the most effective, it was a radio that was established by the UN when it came because of war in the early 2000s. And I found it really interesting that because there's so much division in the country, the only thing that could really unify, and it became a very important radio station, but the only thing that could really unify is their kind of neutrality. And so in a way, their distance, I mean, of course, not political neutrality, the UN is not political neutral, but on the ground, they appear to be neutral because that's part of the thing, right? And so in a way, everyone could access it, you know?
Mm.
And so they seem to have more relevant and usable information for everyone than any of the specific radio stations that have been established on the ground. And so I began to think about the fact that you are not actually of a particular system that gives you closer and deeper, more sophisticated information about that system. If you approach it with integrity, if you have a good network in place and so forth. So Radio Capi was another big influence for this idea of the space station that lands somewhere, but on a different kind of ethical mode than, say, the foreign correspondent who comes to speak about the place. Anyway, so those are some of the more direct influences I can think of now.
Great. No, that was great. Thank you so much.
Good. I speak a lot.
Yeah, but that's very helpful. A lot of information. Well, thank you so much. And can't wait to see your next landing.
Yeah.
Well, unfortunately, I wish I was in Lagos or any places like that, but that might not happen.
We'll connect.
Yeah, anyway. But I'm following pretty much the path online, so it's really nice.